Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movement for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin sale pro.
Show,
they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Guzu Saba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity is so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit won't be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth a crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movement for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin sale pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, and that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police departments to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prisons. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
Hello everyone and welcome to The Last Days. It is a spectacular day in British Columbia. We had a big snowfall dump last night, so you can see the mountains behind me. They're just stunning today. It's absolutely beautiful. In British Columbia, often we have overcast and rain, and even if we have snow, there's no blue sky, so today's a real joy. I'm encouraged that I think we have a couple of guests on that are revealing such truth, and the world is beginning. You know, you can't silence the independent producers out there. You can't silence people that are righteous and want to get the truth out and refuse to be bought or to be scared into silence. And we have two amazing, courageous guests today, and you are going to love them. I opened my dad's Bible. My dad passed away in the last month and a half or so, and I love just reading his Bible to see what he thought was important. And today, it landed on Matthew 5, verse 6, where he's underlined, "Blessed are they who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled." My dad, he was not a perfect man, but he hungered for something, and that was the truth. And that is what I believe he's passed on to me. And I refuse to be a scaredy cat in the face of what we are all dealing with. It is pretty shocking to me that many have compromised. Many are silent on the truth. They are willing to keep their jobs, not sacrifice at this epic hour. Instead, they choose cowardice. And that is happening all over our country. And if we all stood, we actually wouldn't have this problem. If we all stood, if we all hungered for righteousness, then we wouldn't have this problem. Instead, what we have is a compromised society. We have watched the government fall, we've watched our medical establishment fall, and we've watched our churches fall. Saddest part to me, that now churches are asking for vaccine passports. Some are asking for vaccine passports in order to have some time with God. So many of you are deciding to have your time with God at home and tell them to take a flying leap, because that's what they need to do. We have large-scale succumbing to the agenda by well-known ministries who purport to be bearers of the truth, and yet they have fallen. That's been my biggest worry. Why have so many fallen? Why are there so few daring to speak? I was a little surprised, and I think that we're not able to bring it up on the screen here, but Oprah, this is shocking. So she denied her best friend, Gayle King. Oh, we've heard about Oprah and Gayle for years, right? Okay, so, oh, you got it. All right. Oprah brags that Gayle King is barred from her home until she meets her COVID standards. So in order to get to Oprah's house, apparently what you have to do in order to get to Oprah's house, you've got to be double vaccinated, probably with a booster.
The vaccinated, boosted, tested.
Oh, vaccinated, boosted, tested, and quarantined or whatever. I mean, are people crazy? That's just nuts, you know? Now, some of the things I'm kind of concerned about are the things we're hearing about the shortages on food. And I think that our guests are, we have Dr. Michael Palmer on today and Catherine Austin Fitz. And, you know, the whole tie-in with this agenda and economics is very interesting, but the unvaxxed farmers are being barred from CBH sites. So increasingly, farmers who are...
In Australia.
Farmers who are in the midst of harvesting their biggest ever crop must have their first vaccine by December 31st to be allowed onto CBH delivery. Our food, I'm getting a lot of information from some of you out there, even some of you reporting that here in Canada, some of the items that are missing on our shelves is a little bit shocking. And so that I find a little bit alarming and disturbing that is happening. We showed you the video yesterday of how the police are being used to go into places and, you know, remove people that don't have their vax passport. Couple things before we get to our guest. Brampton Mayor Patrick Brown's update. So this is a little bit interesting. This is a tweet basically that says that Brampton Mayor Patrick Brown's update is refreshing and provides needed context. 50%
video.
Oh, it is a video? Should we play that? You've got the video? Yeah, let's take a look.
The province. So when I say we only have two in ICU, it speaks to a picture that is dramatically different than what we saw in previous waves. Now, obviously, the vaccination campaign is responsible for much of that success. And I have to note, it's even more positive than it first appears when you look at those COVID numbers. Because when you look at the COVID numbers at Brampton Civic, more than 50% of the COVID patients, so of the 20 COVID-19 patients, half of them went in for COVID. But what is interesting is half of the COVID-19 patients being counted as COVID-19 patients came in for another healthcare issue and inadvertently found out that they had COVID, which speaks to the fact that COVID is so well spread in the community right now. The Omicron variant is everywhere. I had one infectious disease doctor at Osler tell me that the case counts could be 5 times what we think it is, based on the fact that there is such a degree of community spread. And so when you look at case counts like we're seeing now, that have surpassed case counts the highest case counts that we've seen before, but the hospitalization is so low, the severe cases are so low, that is a positive trend. I know right now in the media there is a lot of negativity and doom and gloom, but when you break down and you look at these numbers in the hospital, you know, there are reasons for cautious optimism that at this point with the Omicron spread, we're not seeing the type of severity that was imagined. I would note, though...
Okay, so why do we not have that kind of leadership going on here in British Columbia? Because instead of that kind of common sense approach, we were told not to have Christmas and we are told not to celebrate for New Year's. Like we're going to listen, but anyways, we're all going to do exactly what we want to do because we are not complying with stupidity. And the day that we start complying, all of us, with this ridiculous, you know, the continued lockdowns for Omicron, which is a nothing burger, we're all freaking out. Everybody, I've got, you know, people, you know, walking outside with masks on. Has the world gone nuts? I don't know what is happening. There just seems to not be the amount of critical thinking that there needs to be. Finally, somebody's saying something. I want to do this share, and my husband wasn't that thrilled about me showing this because, you know, it looks kind of crazy. But here's the thing. Dr. Louis DiBenito shares an advance of his report on the MAC address phenomenon in inoculated individuals. Let me tell you what I did this morning and yesterday. I've spent probably 2 hours of my life speaking with people that are from Israel. These are experts from Israel. These are people that have studied it, and they're saying this is absolutely true, that on certain individuals, what's happening, and that you can even, with a Samsung phone, that now they're swearing to me that it's true. I like these guys. I'm not going to say it's true. I'm just going to say, heads up, that it does appear that some people who have had an inoculation, there seems to be a tie-in with a Bluetooth number that has been attached to them. Is it all copacetic, factual? I don't know yet because I haven't done it yet, but apparently people in France have done the exact testing. They have videos of it. I'm going to be investigating that. And I remember early on we saw a couple of videos of people that seemed to indicate that they had some sort of number that was popping up. They walked past something, you know, and it would pop up. All right, well, that's just too way out there for me. So when I begin to see the pieces coming together and these guys in Israel, I believe them. They are ahead of the track. They're trying to get the information out and it's having a hard time getting out. So is it true? I don't know. Keep an eye out for the fact that some people, and they're saying not all, they don't, because what do we have? I believe that we have a placebo group with this vaccination, you know. I've heard that this is the case. It's hard to get real information, isn't it? If you can't find out the actual ingredients in any of these vaccines without having somebody have to dissect them themselves and put out reports, how do we really know what's going on at all? And so that is a very, very interesting thing to me. The Netherlands is announcing that they plan to give people up to 6 doses of the COVID vaccine. I believe that our Trudeau bought 8 doses of the COVID vaccine. People are beginning to ask the very important questions. How bought into this am I really? I thought I was doing my part by getting, this is what others would say, not me, because I'm not ever doing anything that has to do with taking any part of this vaccine because it has shown itself to be dangerous. The VAERS reports indicate the amount of deaths, so why would I do that, especially since I've already had COVID, I'm completely COVID recovered. I also want to report to you that a very good friend of mine actually asked Dr. Bonnie Henry personally on a phone call, asked her, there are many people that have recovered from COVID. They have the immunity. They have this natural immunity, which she didn't want to call it natural immunity. It's post-COVID, post-infectious
immunity.
And why can't we have the passports into the world, right? Well, she didn't answer that question. And that's because most of these people, they're bought in. There is a buying in either through keeping your paycheck, sharing the narrative. It would be economically unsound to make decisions other than, going along with this agenda. Dr. Bonnie Henry does not want to lose her cushy job. Here's the problem. We are going to be seeing and showing and talking with guests today, which I'd like to get to very quickly. Let's just line up the Dr. Batke quick clip. There are people that are putting forward this initiative, and I believe that a time will come of accountability. I really do. And the more and more information that's getting out, everyone is wisening up. Even the vaccinated are ticked off. This Christmas, the vaccinated hockey players, right, that are having to cancel events, the people that have bought in completely and now, oh, no New Year's? Why? Because of the sneeze variant? You might have Omicron. Oh, one of the big, the big things that shows you have Omicron is you sneeze. I sneezed right before the before we started shooting here. Maybe I have Omicron, now we're canceling things. Now we're ticking off the vaccinated. Woo-hoo! Us unvaccinated, maybe we're the easy group, but now you've ticked off the vaccinated, and it's going to get really bad for you. So my next guest, the guest that we're going to speak to today, one of them has spent many years actually working with this gentleman, and Dr. Sukrit Bhakti. And I want to show you a quick clip of something we're going to be talking about today. He interviewed a fellow who had basically done autopsies on people that had been vaccinated. It's fascinating. Take a look.
The facts are on the table. And the facts have been presented by Arne Burkhardt a week ago. And the facts are damning. All gene-based vaccines, independent of manufacturers, produced the same result in the vaccinees. He has looked at 15. In the last 4 days, the number has been increased to 70 individuals who died after vaccination without any connection to vaccination being established by the authorities. So these were people who died at home, at work, in the car, doing their sports, etc., etc., etc. This is very, very important. Postmortems were performed because the relatives insisted on this. And nothing was found. So the organs appeared normal. However, when Arne Burkhardt, professor of pathology, one of the most experienced professors in Germany, who is now pensioned, by the way, like me, proceeded to look at these organs over the last 6 months. He has spent day after day looking at these organs. He discovered something that was so absolutely damning and absolutely, there's no question now anymore about what is going on, and the answer is in the organs of these people. In 90%, he found clear evidence for autoimmune self-attack by killer lymphocytes on the tissues. The main ones being the heart, the lung, and after that, other tissues such as liver, etc., etc., etc. And this has been now posted on the website of the Doctors for COVID Ethics and is going viral around the world because these data are so damning that you don't have to start looking for other data to know that these vaccines are killing the young and the old.
Okay, my guest today, Dr. Michael Palmer, is from Germany, and you'll be able to tell that with his wonderful accent. He is an MD who worked with Dr. Bakhti for 10 years and got his board certification in medical microbiology. Since 2001, he has been at the University of Waterloo working in biochemistry, and he has had a tremendous amount of experience in dealing with all of these issues surrounding what is going on with the vaccines and what is happening. So we'll be speaking with him. Catherine Austin Fitz is an American investment banker and former public official who served as managing director of Dillon, Reed & Co. And during the presidency of George H.W. Bush as United States Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development for Housing, she has widely written and commented on the subject of public spending and has alleged several large-scale instances of government fraud. And boy, do we need people who are going to tell the truth on all of these issues. So, Dr. Michael Palmer, thank you very much for being here. I understand from your bio that you have worked then with Dr. Bakhti, and that must have been quite an experience. He is really putting out some amazing information right now.
Yes, Dr. Bakhti is one of the most brilliant people I've ever met. I actually met him as a student, so he taught me immunology, and I liked him so much that I asked for a chance to work with him. And then I worked with him between 1990 and 2000 in his Institute of Medical Microbiology in Mainz, Germany.
I am so grateful for you being here. You are speaking out. You have decided to be one of the courageous people that will not be silent in the face of some of the things that are going on, that all of us are uneasy about. And you have taken your expertise and you've begun to dialogue, speaking to crowds, speaking to people about what is truly happening. What is the most worrisome thing that you are seeing happening, and why have you decided that you need to be speaking at a time when many are silent?
Well, maybe the last question first. I mean, the reason I got into science is because I am very interested in finding out the truth about things. And so that's what I simply have tried to do throughout my life, and that's what I'm continuing to do, regardless of the political surroundings. You know, I'm just simply trying to understand and to speak the truth as I see it. That's simple.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that very much. Can I ask, before you get into some presentation that you have, when did you begin? You know, we all January 2020, maybe even a bit before, we began to hear about COVID and all of that. What was the point when you went, something else is going on here, and you began seeing things that were alarming to you?
Well, I mean, the first thing that struck me as odd was the idea of locking up healthy people. That never made sense to me. Or testing people that have no symptoms. That never made sense, regardless of whether or not the pathogen in question is dangerous or not. As long as they don't have symptoms, there's very little reason to either test or lock them up. Another point, a turning point for me, was that I asked my daughter, she's actually a pediatrician in Germany and works at a hospital that takes in the sick from a population of 180,000 people. And at the at peak COVID in spring 2020, I asked her, how many COVID patients do you have in your hospital? She said, 7, out of a population of 180,000, right? And I asked, how many in ICU? 1. And then said, how many dead? 0. And it simply actually went down from there, right? So that was the peak, 7 patients, and the hospital was the peak. And there was never, throughout 2020, at least a single fatality due to COVID in this hospital. So when I heard about these numbers, it was very clear to me that obviously we are fed a big pile of bullshit by the media and by the politicians.
100%. If I could just say hello to Catherine Austin Fitz right now, just to welcome her on so everybody knows she's there. We've got her on by telephone because of where she is in the world right now. Catherine, could I ask you the same thing? You've been, you are no stranger to what goes on with governments and some of the, as you say, government fraud that can take place. When did you begin to suspect something else is happening with this whole COVID agenda in your line of work and field of expertise?
So I've been tracking what I call the financial coup d'etat for the last 20 years. And what I've been warning people is that when the retirement started to occur of the baby boomers, that the leadership would have to do something to cover up the fact that they had literally engineered a financial coup and taken a great deal of the money for the retirement savings. So I was expecting what we call the going direct reset. I was expecting for the central banks to re-engineer the financial system. The thing that makes COVID particularly dangerous, you can see by looking at the vaccine passports. What they're trying to do is put into place a control grid that will literally end democracy and liberty and freedom in the West forever. And it's, you know, those who liken it to the Chinese social credit system, it's that, but it's much worse. Very difficult for most Americans to understand what is contemplated here and the complete end of all the freedoms they've known all their lives. So to me, we're at a fork in the road, and one fork leads to freedom and the other leads to slavery. I'm a Christian. I would rather be dead than be a slave. So to me, every person who understands what's happening, whether from the medical point of view or the financial point of view, has to speak up and say stop, because we are literally at a crossroads where we could lose everything.
That is so true, and that's why I'm so grateful for the both of you. And it all ties in, as we're going to see, that it, you know, we have a medical expert such as Dr. Palmer and somebody who studied finance, and it's amazing how they are intertwined. So, Dr. Palmer, if you could tell us, basically, what are you sounding the alarm about? What is crucial to you to share?
Well, I mean, what I'm going to try to do today is provide an update and actually some explanations, some detail on what Professor Bhakti already spoke about in the clip that you played. I want to just show the evidence that Professor Burkhardt has shared. That's actually the key point of the presentation I have prepared. In principle, the vaccination is, right, I have been repeating these three points. Vaccination has never been necessary. It was clear from the beginning that the virus didn't even merit a vaccine, because it simply doesn't have the kill rate that is that you would expect from a proper virus against which you want to vaccinate. Then secondly, the vaccines don't work. That was actually clear from the very beginning, that all these efficacy data were fabricated. I actually pointed out already in last year, right, as soon as I saw the documentation by the FDA, right, on which they had based the approval of the Pfizer vaccine and also of the other vaccines, as soon as I saw the documentation and read it carefully, I could see the contradictions and the lies in those documents. Okay, so the FDA, in all of 2 or 3 weeks, that was about the time that they had available to themselves, right, to go through all the documents submitted to them by Pfizer and to concoct some sort of document for the public. Just looking through those documents, it was clear this was just a pack of lies. And the FDA must have known it, because the people at the FDA, they are experienced and well-trained. They are not dummies. And if they put out something like this, then this can only mean that somebody is holding a gun to their head. This is the only explanation that makes sense. And it's the same thing with the EMA, right, the European Medicines Agency, right? They just move, just like our governments move in lockstep to implement the same brain-dead and absurd measures all over the world, which proves that they get their playbook from somewhere else. So it is with these regulatory authorities that are asked to keep us safe, essentially. They are supposed to probably evaluate the documents submitted by the manufacturers. They are supposed to demand updates, enhancements, additional studies in order to sort out questions that arose during the review. None of this has happened. Right? If you look through the FDA documents and through the EMA documents, if you look through it, they just waved everything through and they just simply invented excuses for Pfizer and for Moderna and so on, and also for themselves to rationalize their decision not to demand any sort of safety studies. Okay, so this is how these approval processes were engineered. So that's one big thing. So these vaccines, the efficacy data in those documents didn't work out, and obviously also there were grave safety risks that were apparent from the fragmentary, from the insufficient data. It was nevertheless clear that there were grave safety risks with these vaccines, and none of these were actually followed up in the clinical trials. Okay, so I have actually been saying this since before the vaccinations even started, it was clear. Okay, and also you brought up Dr. Bhakti. He was very clear, very explicit, very prescient in pointing out exactly where the damage would be happening. Dr. Bhakti has been clear on the point that the worst reactions would focus on the blood vessels and there would be lots of blood clotting and so on and so forth. And this is exactly what we are seeing in the adverse events reports databases, right? The VAERS system in the United States, huge vigilance in the European Union and in some other databases. This is exactly what we're seeing, lots of clotting in addition to all kinds of inflammation. And it turns out now also in the findings that Dr. Burkhardt shared with the public, we see that pattern. We see that the blood vessels are at the heart of the matter. They get hit the hardest and most of the damage actually follows from there. But we also see more general inflammation of the tissues, as I will show you.
So basically, one thing, so these people died and they did autopsies on them, but how many people are alive and yet that process is at work in their body even now as we speak?
Yes, that is true. We have to expect that it is indeed, at least on a smaller scale, happening in others as well, right? And it's another important study that appeared recently was one that showed the spike protein to persist after vaccination for at least 4 months. Okay? That's a very long time. That also explains why some of the cases, right, Dr. Burkhardt autopsied, or he looked at the materials from autopsies of people who had died within from 1 week to almost 3 months of the vaccination, or more than 2 months of the vaccination. You might wonder if the death occurred more than 2 months after vaccination, is it still related to the vaccine? Now, given the fact that the spike protein can be detected after vaccination for 4 months, there's absolutely no difficulty there, right? So we cannot simply dismiss reports of inflammation and even death, even if they occur several months after the vaccination.
And that's a very good point. Sorry, but a lot of people are just saying they're discounting deaths. You know, a heart attack happens 2 months after, 3 months after the vaccination. They're discounting all that. That's how they're trying to eliminate the validity of the VAERS reports. Good point you're making.
Yeah, now we do see in the VAERS reports, we do see that most fatal events occur within about a week, right? To 2 days, 2 days after vaccination are the very highest. About half of the fatal events reported occur in within 2 days. 80% occurs in a week, and the remainder then over a longer tail. Now the question is there also report bias in there? Are deaths that occur at a greater time, with a greater delay after vaccination, are they simply not reported because they are discounted as related to the vaccination anyway? So we don't know how much, to what extent this curve is due to bias. Another point, in the VAERS database, we see a lot of myocarditis diagnosis among the young, and we see a lot of heart attacks among the elderly. Now, in Burkhardt's data, most of his patients were elderly, right? And still, he sees quite a bit of myocarditis in there. I'm just wondering how many cases that are diagnosed as heart attacks are indeed myocarditis, because if you don't do an autopsy and just go by a little bit of laboratory tests and by electrocardiogram and so on, you might actually conflate the two. That's possible.
Okay.
So in an elderly person, you would be inclined to assume it's a heart attack, because heart attacks are so much more common normally than myocarditis is. But it is quite possible, I think, that a fair share, not all, but a fair share, particularly of those late cases, of cardiac death in elderly patients is indeed due to myocarditis. Both heart attack and myocarditis can cause your heart to stop all of a sudden. Okay? Simply by the observation that your heart stops beating, you cannot make a determination what's the underlying pathological process.
You know, one recent story, sir, is the New York Times editor who basically, it was one day, I believe, after his Moderna booster shot that he's died. And so there is definitely the beginning of not being able to hide some of these things when you're seeing more well-known people that this will happen to. But yet, they do continue to say this is safe. I mean, that's the mantra that we're hearing all the time.
It's obviously not safe. I mean, there's no reason to assume that it's safe. It's not going to get any safer. If anything, it's going to get worse after each successive booster shot. Actually, my wife, she's Chinese, and she followed she follows several social media websites of Chinese people, and she found several reports on there of people who, after their booster shot, had developed ulcers in their throats. Okay, that is normally, if you encounter it in medical practice, this is a clue that there might be something really bad going on, a lymphoma or a leukemia. So typically, if a person presents with this kind of sign, you would start blood work in order to diagnose some sort of hematological malignancy, right? That would be at least there would be grounds for suspicion, so you would actually do this sort of diagnostics. Now, it doesn't mean that all of these patients have leukemia, but what it does suggest that all of these people have, at least in the short term, a very badly suppressed immune system. This is, right, this is the mechanism, right? The immune system is so far knocked out, that the local flora, bacterial flora on the mucous membranes of your mouth actually starts nibbling away at the mucous membranes. There's no more defense against this normally very innocuous and harmless microbial flora. So the defense breaks down. And that fits with a couple of other clinical observations, such as reactivated virus infections, exploding cancers and leukemias in some individuals, and so on and so forth. So there seems to be a very, there seems to be a very bad immune suppression, and we can only hope it's going to be transient and the immune system will recover itself, but it certainly won't if you keep getting those boosters, right? I mean, if you get booster after booster after booster, then your immune system will simply get knocked to the ground and never get up again.
I believe it's Dr. Cole in Idaho who is reporting on, a vast increase in cancers.
Yes, that's right. And yes, and also other people have come forward with similar observations. But Ryan Cole, I think, was the first one and the most clear and well-spoken one. He made it very plain from his own observations. And I mean, he has personal, large body of evidence that he reviews. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is shocking. We're also all coming to the place, Dr. Palmer, where it's not just somebody in the news or someone else's story. We're all having friends impacted. We're beginning to hear of so-and-so's uncle who died a day later. Personal friends ending up in the hospital with, of course, an adverse reaction to a shot, and it begins to be a very personal issue. And so do you think we're making headway? Do you think anyone's paying attention? Why is there still this continued push, even to the point in Canada of talking about the immunization of babies?
Well, I mean, it certainly doesn't have an above board medical justification. This is just simply not possible. Nobody in their right mind can honestly believe that there is, you know. I mean, you have to be thoroughly brainwashed and completely bent out of shape mentally in order to buy into the story. So, I mean, the real purpose of any of this was never to keep anybody safe or to improve anybody's health. It was always an agenda of destruction. I mean, another thing that is very clear, I also, after looking in detail at the genome of this SARS-CoV-2 virus, SARS-CoV-2, it is clear just simply from looking at the sequences, it's a man-made virus. It's clear. You don't need to read a newspaper. You don't need to disbelieve or disbelieve Fauci. You don't even need to listen to any of it. You just only need to look. You need to know what you're looking for, and you'll see those traits, which are very clearly. I mean, right? You can distinguish a piece of wilderness from a garden, right? You know which piece of landscape has been tended to by humans and which one hasn't.
So that's why it's so shocking.
You don't need to read about it. You don't need to know who exactly did what, but you know.
It's obvious.
It's obvious.
Because Dr. Fauci, he came out. He didn't want to go with the theory that it was man-made. I mean, Dr. Fauci presents himself as some kind of expert, and he's just brutal.
He may be an expert, but he is not an honest scientist. I mean, that so much should be clear by now.
he's basically saying that he's ready to pull out, there could be an Omicron vaccine.
Wow.
That's the next thing.
Yeah, okay.
That, you know, I mean, it's just nuts.
To push more injections on the populace. I mean, it is clear. And I mean, regardless of whether or not the people in the West were in cahoots with the ones who produced the virus, it is clear that the whole reaction from the beginning was designed to maximize the damage on the economy, to take away people's freedoms, their livelihoods, that kind of thing, their assets. This is what's going on, and this was the plan from the very beginning. So simply the nature of the reaction, of the so-called response to this so-called emergent virus made it clear that both the virus and the so-called response to it were part of the same engineered agenda. I mean, this was just simply obvious from the sheer nonsensicality of it. I mean, it never made any sense in terms of protecting people, protecting their health.
So really, this is just in your mind. You have made some very strong allegations that this is an agenda that's far different than, oh, we'll just get a vaccine to protect us from a man-made virus. This is far beyond
It was always clear you cannot properly develop a vaccine in a couple of months. Right? I mean, this is just, you know, this is nonsense. I mean, for a proper vaccine development process takes years. So it was never to there was never any chance to develop a vaccine before the virus had spread through the entire population anyway, and everybody would have already had acquired natural immunity. There was never a chance to get a proper vaccine to market. What we have are not vaccines. These are not tested. They are not different. They are not spread. They have not undergone any proper testing. And they don't work like any proper would, right? We have two or three types. We have three types of vaccines against viruses that so far have proven somewhat effective. Okay, we have the inactivated vaccine, so you simply grow yourself a batch of the virus and then you treat it with some chemical in order to kill it off, but it still remains good enough to stimulate an immune response. So you inject this inactivated virus and you get your immune response. That works. This is, for example, what we do with poliomyelitis nowadays. Right? We use this so-called good old vaccine. Then we can have a live virus vaccine. So this is an actual virus that has been typically passaged through some cell cultures, often derived from different host species, so that this virus has a bunch of mutations that improve its infectiousness for the other hosts, but decreases infectiousness for the human. Okay? So this sort of thing has been done with measles virus, for example. Okay? That's an attenuated virus. And then we have the so-called subunit vaccines, in which we use recombinant DNA technology to produce a fragment of the virus. For example, with hepatitis B, we just produce the major surface antigen of the hepatitis B virus, which as such is not infectious. We just inject it and we get our antibody. That works. These are the tried and true methods. Why did we have to all of a sudden throw all this experience away and switch to these experimental gene-based vaccines if at the same time we also wanted to produce a new vaccine in record time? I mean, wouldn't common sense suggest that if you have little time, you have a new virus against which to develop a vaccine, you would rely on the method that you understand that has been successful in the past, instead of using a method that has no track record of success at all?
For sure.
I mean, it made no sense. This is just...
It's
a total bullshit story.
Right, I thought maybe we could, with that information, we could ask Catherine Austin Fitz a question, because we're going to talk to her a little bit more in a bit as well, but does it make sense, Catherine, then, with what he's saying, that it's not even needed. We don't even need this kind of vaccine, which is not a vaccine, experimental gene therapy. It seems that it would be tied into a financial agenda.
So it's tied into a global coup d'etat. You're looking at a fundamental restructuring of how the governance system works on planet Earth. So it has nothing to do with health. It has to do with control in a variety of ways. First of all, it's going to help bring down the life expectancy of the population, which is part of what you need to reconcile the fact that you literally have shifted a lot of the retirement savings away and you can't keep your promise. So it's a way of dealing with the fact that that you're going to abrogate contracts for the population. The second thing is you don't really know. We know a great deal about what's in these injections and the harm that it does, but we also have a lot of unanswered questions about what's in them and how it relates to the vaccine task force and the IV system. The people who are most pushing for these to be mandated are the central bankers. And so it's only because they want the vaccine task force. The vaccine task force are part of a control system that will allow them not just to mandate health policies, but financial policies, and ultimately to take away your assets. So this is part of a global coup d'etat. And it's very important to understand that if the vaccine passports go into place, that every liberty that we've sort of known and taken for granted in the West can and likely will be taken away. So think of this as a, you know, sort of a sneaky marketing plan for completely upending the financial system into one where if you don't do what you're told, you won't be allowed to, for example, when you combine vaccine passports with central bank digital currencies, known as CBDCs, if you don't, if they don't want you traveling more than 5 miles from your home, you won't be able, your credit card won't work 5 miles from your home. Your bank account won't work. They can turn your bank account off. If they don't want you buying pizza, you can't buy pizza. And this can all be run with AI and software so that it's a very economic system.
The story that I mentioned earlier on, which is nothing that I can verify as of yet, but I am told that people in France are verifying this, do you think that there is some probability that somehow some of the vaccines contain some sort of number and that the beginning of this process is already there?
So here's what you need to know. All you need to run a complete control system is the vaccine passport. So you don't need any secret ingredient. I mean, I do believe that there are inexplicable ingredients in here, and it would be great to know all the ingredients. But you can simply use the vaccination passport, vaccination process to get the passport. And the passports are really what you need, and you don't need any ingredient in the human body to serve as an ID. Not to say that those ingredients might not be there, we don't know. But in other words, the vaccine passports are what gives you your control, and almost indifferent to what's in the injections themselves.
Right, that makes a lot of sense. And so it's all actually very terrifying. Dr. Palmer, you agree that this is very bad, and you are asking people not to comply. You are saying that if this means a hit right now for people's jobs, you're saying, well, you might have to put up with something, but you're also of the opinion that if we keep on getting information and we keep standing, that maybe we will see victory.
Yeah, I mean, we have to try, right? I mean, there is simply no...
no choice.
There's no other option. I mean, you cannot win it. You cannot comply your way into freedom.
Right.
And, I mean, you cannot win at this game of getting it after the next and to buy to rent your freedom for another 3 months. It's
so you also have to understand that if you comply with this, not only can they continue to give you injections that could kill you, but they can take away your property, they can take away your assets,
yes,
they can take away everything.
Yes.
So if you comply, you have no chance. If you don't comply, we have a chance to stop it. Our only chance is if we don't comply and enough of us do it and we're able to prevent it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I agree completely.
And Dr. Palmer, you had some information that you wanted to share, some graphs.
Okay.
Please,
well,
yeah.
I can do that now. I will try to maybe I can skip some of it. Let's see how that goes.
Oh, don't skip anything. No. Just tell us everything. Our audience is dying. We have a huge audience watching right now. People are loving you guys and appreciative of this valuable information.
Okay, good. So what I really want to do is I want to give an update on the toxicity of mRNA vaccines, and we are going to start with a brief recap of how these things work. We have some lipid nanoparticles that enclose the messenger RNA, and the messenger RNA is inserted into the target cells of the host of our own bodies, and there it is released into the cell. This is the function of some specific cationic lipids, We have a mixture of lipid molecules here, and the cationic lipids are the ones that cause the release of the mRNA, which then, once inside the cell, is free to direct the synthesis of spike proteins, and the spike protein is taken to the cell surface. Okay. Now, what this does, it attracts the attention of the immune system, which will produce antibodies against the spike protein. That is one effect, okay? And this, these antibodies and the immune effector mechanisms, controlled by them, they will attack the cell that produces the spike protein. Part of the spike protein will actually undergo degradation inside the cell, and the fragments will appear on the cell surface in some other place, and the fragments will activate another arm of the immune system, the so-called cytotoxic T cells. So these cells will also start attacking the cells that had started making the spike protein. So these are two mechanisms of toxicity. We have a third one, and this is the cleavage of the spike protein, right? Part of the molecule that appears here on the cell surface can be released and can then swim away through the bloodstream, for example, and can inside the bloodstream activate blood platelets, and that is contributes to blood clotting. Okay, so these are the major mechanisms. Now, toxicity mechanisms, in addition to these, to the immune attack by both antibodies and B cells, and as well as T cells, on cells that produce a spike protein, we also have direct cytotoxicity of the cationic lipids. Now, we'll get back to this a little bit later on. Okay, now, what do we really know about the toxicity of these vaccines from preclinical trials? There wasn't really a whole lot in the FDA documentation, but some months after the vaccines had already been in use, some studies surfaced that Pfizer had submitted to the Japanese regulators. Okay, and there was some surprising bits of information there. The first really surprising feature is that even a quarter, right, 15 minutes after injection, we already see quite a bit of the vaccine appearing in the bloodstream. Okay, and after 2 hours, we reach a peak, and then the vaccine in the bloodstream decreases as it accumulates in various organs. And we have among the organs in which this accumulates, we have the usual suspects, the liver and the spleen. I'm not going to go to the reasons of those, but we also have high levels in the adrenal glands and in the ovaries, right, with obvious risks for, in this case, fertility, and with adrenal glands, that's not a good thing to have this much vaccine there either. Now, if we look at it, at these data, right, we can ask ourselves, what sort of toxicity should we have expected, right? What toxicity do we need to worry about, okay? The first thing is, if the vaccine appears so rapidly in the bloodstream, you would have to expect that the spike protein is produced in the blood vessels, and then the immune system will destroy those cells in the blood vessels, and this will lead to blood clotting. This is exactly what Dr. Bhakti has been saying since the very beginning.
Exactly, right, and this would be what he's finding in the autopsies, I guess, right?
This is exactly the evidence that he's finding in dead individuals, right? I will show you that in a second, exactly. Now, the question is, did Pfizer actually follow up this potential risk in clinical trials? The answer is obviously no. The FDA didn't make them do it. The EMA didn't make them do it. Nobody made them do it. They just simply waved it away. Okay, then we have the distribution, right, in many organs, right, also in organs other than the ones listed here. So this means we can expect inflammation in many organs. And if we have widespread inflammation, we can expect autoimmune diseases. This is also substantiated by Burkhardt's findings. It also was not followed up in the clinical trials. Then, because we see the accumulation in these organs, right, we can infer the biochemical mechanism by which this accumulation occurs. I'm not going to go into details, but we have to infer that it is likely also going to accumulate in the placenta and in lactating breast glands. Also, this risk was not followed up with any animal trials and not in clinical trials either. Okay, but Burkhardt actually has now looked at one placenta and found major lesions there as well. And in both Weyers and Utah-Vigilance, there are reports of babies, of breastfed infants that died or got severely sick shortly after their mothers had been injected with a vaccine. This risk had to be expected based on the data I just showed you. It was not followed up. There was no participation of pregnant women or of young mothers in the vaccine trials, but nevertheless, the vaccine was applied to young mothers right away with disastrous results. Okay, now you already know these numbers, right? This happens to be a statistic from Utah Vigilance. I'm not going to go over all of it, but all four vaccines have a sizable body count and a total of almost 25,000. That was the case in September. Now Utah Vigilance is actually above 30,000. So now I come to the autopsies by Burkhardt. Okay, as Dr. Bhakti said, the people who were autopsied here had initially not even been, the deaths had not been connected to the vaccination, and it was due to the initiative of the family that these autopsies were carried out in the first place. Okay? So, and Burkhardt concludes from his findings that in all but one of these patients, the vaccine was likely or highly likely the cause of death. Right? He deems it highly likely in about half the cases and a somewhat lower grade of likelihood in the residual cases. Okay, so before I show you more pathology picture slides, I just want to give you an example of this is a bit of healthy liver tissue, and this is what it looks like under the microscope. So now what are we looking at here? We see individual cells, right? You can see the outlines of them, and you see the bluish cell nuclei, right? So these colors are not there during life. These colors are induced simply by staining the tissue samples with a mixture of dyes. Now, the nuclei are always very well defined, right? We cannot always see where one cell ends and the other begins. It's also not so important, but we can infer where there's a nucleus of a cell, okay? Now, let's get into it. I told you earlier on that the blood vessels are at the center of the pathology. Okay, now here we have a healthy venule. A venule is a very small vein. We see here the outline of it, and in the middle we see some blood, right? So these red dots here, these are red blood cells. The bluish ones, these are leukocytes of various kinds. So this is a healthy venule. Notice we have this nice, very thin, delicate cell layer, which goes all around. This is the so-called endothelial cell layer. And delicate as it is, this cell layer stands between you. That's all that stands between you and disaster. Okay? This endothelial cell layer is necessary. It must be intact in order to prevent the blood from clotting. Whenever the endothelial cell layer is ruptured, for example, if you cut yourself, or if there is some inflammation that kills some of the cells in this endothelial cell layer, then the blood will start clotting. Okay? Now here we see a venule from one of these vaccine victims. So what we see here is the support structure is still there, but the endothelial cells are peeled off. They are all congregating here in the middle of the blood vessel. So they are swollen up, right? The nuclei look bigger now. They are swollen up, but they are all detached from the support. So this means the blood gets directly into contact with the support and it will start clotting. Okay? We see here a venule in advanced stage of disintegration, right? So here we still have an intact outline. Here we don't. Here we don't, right? Here it's already kind of merged with the surrounding tissue. Okay. What we also see here, that's very important, you see these little blue cells, right? All round like balls, and there's very little cytoplasm, right? Very little other recognizable matter around them. We will see lots of these lymphocytes. That's important. The lymphocytes are the backbone of the specific immune system, right? The lymphocytes do the recognizing if there is some, for example, the spike protein or some other antigen, and they do the antibody producing, and they do the killing of the cells that produce the spike protein, for example. Here on the right-hand side, a similar situation, but a different staining technique. which just highlights the lymphocytes, right? So you see the lymphocytes here invading the space between the support and the detached endothelial cell layer. So lots of vascular damage, right? That's point one. Now, Sutcher had also mentioned the damage to the lungs, right, which is very important. On the left-hand side, again, to orient ourselves, we have some healthy lung tissue. What we see here is just a fascinating organ. I'm not going to dwell too long on it. I really like it here, right? We see some blood-filled blood vessels here. We see these delicate tissue layers, right? These are air-filled spaces. So here's the air that you breathe in and out. And you see these delicate tissue layers, and embedded, you see all this red. These are the capillaries through which the blood flows. Okay, so we have this very effective exchange of gases through across a very short distance. Now here, on the right-hand side, what we see here is another blood vessel, which looks still sort of intact, even so the endothelial cell layers here, and that's also suspicious. But we see here this big blob, this big cluster of lymphocytes, right? So we have a big invasion of autoimmune-like, of immune cells here. So that's one thing. Then we see an advanced stage of lung damage, lots of lymphocytes. All these blue dots here are lymphocytes. Very little air-filled space left here, right? It's all filled with scar tissue. So this person would have had a very hard time breathing, right? There is simply no more air really reaching the lung. And again, also driven by these lymphocytes. And now heart tissue, here we have healthy muscle fibers, right? We see the nuclei. We don't see a very clear delineation between individual muscle cells, but they sort of align into these intact fibers. Here on the right-hand side, we see invasion by multiple lymphocytes. And these are the remnants of the myocardial, of the heart muscle fibers undergoing destruction. Here we see a healthy liver tissue, right, at lower magnifications than earlier on. It's the same organ, right? So we have the sponge-like structure here, mostly just epithelial liver cells, regular liver cells visible. Here on the right-hand side, again, big clusters of lymphocytes, which shouldn't be there. We also see these big fat droplets here, right? Accumulation of fat is something that always happens to the liver. If it feels bad for some reason, then the liver starts accumulating fat. That tends to be reversible, but this sort of inflammation probably will leave behind some scar tissue and some functional deficit. Okay, the thyroid gland, right? This is another fascinating organ, right? This is a regular thyroid gland structure. I'm not going to go into the details, even though I would like to, but here we see on the right-hand side, completely destroyed, right? This very well-defined tissue structure here with these follicles is gone. You don't see it anymore. All you see is just a big accumulation of lymphocytes. And so this is actually a somewhat rarer finding. This was present in only one or two patients. The previous findings, right, in the liver, lung, and heart, they were quite common and present in the majority of the patients. Okay, so Burkhardt calls his findings lymphocyte amok. Okay, the lymphocytes run amok all over the place in all the body, really unprecedented. This just doesn't happen normally, right? If you have some specific autoimmune disease, you can have something like this, so it's thyroiditis Hashimoto, but then it will affect only the thyroid gland. Or you can have something similar in the salivary glands, that's known as Sjögren's disease, but you won't have it anywhere else, and so on and so forth. But to have at the same time the lymphocytes attacking all organ systems, that is unheard of. And since it is so unique, it is pretty clear it must be ascribed to the vaccines, right? We saw the focus on the blood vessels, right? The destruction of the blood vessels leads to blood clotting. We have large and small clots all over the place in all variations. We have in some cases, right? We have in some cases manifestations, for example, in these glands that resemble true autoimmune disease. And in here we note that excessive stimulation of the immune system is known to cause autoimmunity. And we have to expect that in some people, even right, if the damage to the lung and the heart and the liver proves survivable, and may even result over time, that in some specific organ, some autoimmune disease will be left behind. Okay? Then what this also, these findings also suggest, right? We have such a high level of inflammation and such a high level of lymphocyte deployment that the immune system is no longer able, it has no more bandwidth left, no more attention left to defend against proper real pathogens, real viruses, for example, or even the bacterial flora on the mucous membranes of your throat, as I mentioned earlier, right? After the third injection, some people show with ulcers in those locations. So the immunosuppression would also be explained by this diffuse, widespread deployment of lymphocytes. Okay, now, since we are talking about mRNA technology, it bears mention, right, that this technology has never worked. The idea is old. It was first tried in the 1990s, right? I'm not even sure we should call it a technology because it never worked, right?
Yes.
If I say I have invented a technology to levitate, but it doesn't work, is it a technology or just a figment of my imagination?
Okay.
It's not really a technology. So, okay, now one important point, right? I finally digged it up, Whitney Webb, the independent journalist, she wrote a wonderful expose on Moderna and their many failures, right? Everything they tried failed. And importantly, what failed was also this approach. They didn't try to use it as a vaccine initially, but they want to try genetic enzyme defects. Now, why is this important? Why is the failure important? In this case, we are trying to introduce a functioning version of an enzyme into the body that already has a deficient version. So there won't be an immune response to it, or only a very, very minor one. So any toxicity that was observed in those trials, and it was observed because the clinical trials were discontinued, must be due to something else than these immunological mechanisms, right? And the toxicity here is due to the cationic lipids, right? These crucial components of the lipid mixture, of the lipid nanoparticles that is needed for releasing the mRNA into the cell, right? The uptake of the lipid nanoparticles into the cell that works without cationic lipids, but to release the mRNA from the cage into the cell so that it can start directing the synthesis of the protein that it encodes, that requires these cationic lipids, and these are always toxic, okay? Now, one important point is that the cationic lipids cause DNA damage. Why is that so? Cationic lipids, as I just mentioned, they are needed to breach the cell's membrane barriers. And this will then also happen to the so-called mitochondria. This is a membrane-delimited structure inside the cell. And in this compartment, hydrogen is reacted with oxygen. If these mitochondria are damaged, this means that they will produce partially reduced highly reactive oxygen species. These cause damage from radiation effects, right, downstream of ionizing radiation such as gamma rays. It's also reactive oxygen species that's generated and cause the actual DNA damage. Now, DNA damage in turn, as you probably know, causes cancer. Another important point is that the DNA damage, regardless of its cause, has a lifetime dose limit. You can give a person only so much radiation. You can give them only so much cytotoxic anti-cancer drugs before they give out. If you go over that dose limit, you will kill them. You cannot give, for example, the same person two bone marrow transplants, right? The amount of DNA toxicity that you apply in preparation for the first one is so high that you have maxed them out. You cannot go beyond that limit. Now, in this context, we must note that right now there seems to be a bonanza in progress, right? Even so, mRNA vaccines and therapeutics have failed so far for decades. Now, all of a sudden, they are considered a hot commodity. There are plenty, there are dozens of varieties now in testing, okay? Now, the important point to note here is all of these, regardless of what their purpose may be, all of them will have to contain these cationic lipids. And the lipid toxicity will be cumulative across all of them. So if you get your 4 or 8 COVID shots, and then you get another 8 shots against some virus that has been reactivated by the COVID shots, and you have 16 shots, the lipid toxicity across all of these 16 shots will have to be counted together, and it will count towards this lifetime dose limit. Right? So before you know it, you drop dead. This is the plan. This is the plan. So it goes beyond COVID. This mRNA technology is a great way to poison the population. Everybody's deaths will look a bit different, right? You might die simply because you succumb to an infection. You might develop a cancer. You might develop a leukemia, whatever it is. Okay? Everybody will look different, but ultimately they will all have been poisoned in the same way. So now just one more nugget here about this. Okay, so this issue, this question of DNA toxicity actually came up in the EMA approval process of the Moderna vaccine. There were some animal trials that clearly showed the Moderna vaccine to have DNA, to cause DNA damage. So this is what the EMA made of it. No carcinogenesis studies were submitted. This is scientifically acceptable and in line with relevant guidelines on non-clinical development of vaccine candidates. Not expected to have carcinogenic potential. They are not expected. They are expected. I can give you a literature list with dozens of articles that show all the same point, that these cationic lipids have DNA damaging potential, which equates carcinogenic potential. Okay? This is what the EMA makes of it. They call this a vaccine, and therefore they simply go by these guidelines that may be suitable for granddaddy's old vaccine because we already know what's in there, but certainly it's not applicable to these completely novel and untested compounds.
I mean, this is a danger to all of society, to everyone we know and love who's taken this.
Absolutely.
And they know this, and I mean, this is the science behind it. People are loving this in the comments. They are so grateful for something so graphic that they can literally, you know, see what is being found out about these vaccines. Thank you. Please continue.
So I'm actually more or less at the end. I would just reiterate, right, now, as Sucharit said, I completely agree with him. We have unambiguous evidence that the predicted harm due to immune attack on self is indeed manifest. Okay? We also see that the EMA and FDA are completely captured. And this is the basis on which the pharmaceutical companies now want to cash in. They know that anything they want to ram down our throats is going to be waved through by the EMA and the FDA because these agencies no longer function.
So that's really what this is. Yeah.
This is it. The FDA and the EMA, I mean, I have looked at the reports on Janssen, on AstraZeneca, on Moderna, on Pfizer, both from the FDA and from the EMA. And it is clear from each single of these reports that no proper safety work has been done. And that neither of these agencies imposed any serious demands on any of these manufacturers. They are completely taken out. They are simply completely, they have a gun to their heads. That's the only picture I can come up with. FDA and EMA have a gun to their heads. This is what the pharmaceutical companies are banking on in their effort to develop all these wonderful new therapeutics and drugs, okay? And if you give me 2 more minutes, I want to make
absolutely
one more point.
Please.
One more point, okay? Why the mRNA vaccines were a bad idea from first principles. Okay, we have some people, I have to call them out for this, I'm sorry, but I have to call out the great inventor Robert Malone. He now says, okay, he's seen the light, that mRNA vaccines after all are not a good idea. They were never a good idea based on first principles, and he should have known it and he should have told us. Not some nobody guy from Waterloo like myself should have to say this. He should have told us, and he never did. He never reveals anything that is actually novel and substantial. He always says something about somebody else has already said. So now the difference between a regular virus or a live vaccine and a mRNA vaccine in 3 minutes. Okay, what happens in a primary infection with a viral particle? A viral particle contains the nucleic acid encoding a specific antigen, but it also contains the protein antigen itself. So in the native, in the naive host that doesn't have any prior immunity, the virus succeeds in infecting a cell. It produces the antigens which appear on the cell surface, and the immune system kicks in. It makes antibodies, it makes cytotoxic T cells, and these destroy the cell. So in the initial infection, you will have some cell death, you will have some attendant inflammation, and this is why you get sick. What happens in reinfection? Now you have the antibodies bind to these antigens on the surface of the virus particle, and this prevents the virus, in most cases at least, from infecting a cell, and instead the virus is neutralized and undergoes degradation, which means after reinfection you don't get sick. Okay, simple as that. That's the purpose of immunity after all. Now, if we have an mRNA vaccine, we inject the nucleic acid encapsulated in a completely non-characteristic lipid envelope. Okay, initially the first injection triggers a similar process, right? So the mRNA enters the cell, the antigens are expressed, and the cell is killed off. Okay, what happens upon re-injection and booster injection? We have the antibodies, but the antibodies, unlike with the virus, they have nothing to grab onto because the antigen simply isn't there. Simple as that. So there is nothing to stop the mRNA to reach the cells again, but now we have an even angrier immune system that attacks those cells, and we have more cell death. So with a rare virus or a regular live vaccine, the second injection is benign and any subsequent injection or infection will be benign. With an mRNA vaccine, booster injections will tend to get worse and worse because the immune system is going to get riled up more and more, and therefore we will see a more immediate response to the expression of the virus antigens, and we will see more cells killed. So for this very simple, elementary reason, nobody should ever have thought about using mRNA vaccines against any infectious agent. It is just for this very simple first principle that this should never have been even tried. And those people who claim to be experts in this so-called technology, they should have known, they should have told us from the very beginning, and they did not. So that's it. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that is just right there in your face. We've been hearing about this. We've been hearing about, like, the cytokine storm and things that I remember Del Bigtree sort of did an analogy of how you train. Basically, these shots are training to only look for one thing, and then when the reinfection or variants come along, they can't recognize them. Is that sort of...
Well, that's another aspect of it. Yes, these vaccines, they only contain one single antigen, and a natural infection will always train the immune system against all viral antigens, right? This spike protein comes for only about 1/8 of the information inside the virus. A natural infection with a real virus will train the immune system against 100% of the viral antigens, so viral information.
I mean, based on this, there should be a dead stop. There should be a stop right now because of the damage being done by the vaccines.
it should never have started. It shouldn't have even been tried. It is just simply not a suitable technology. You allow the asset to fly under the radar to evade early defense, and therefore, regardless of pre-existing immunity, the mRNA is going to reach its target cells and is going to induce these cells to make the antigen, and this will cause the immune system to attack the body cells. And this is going to get worse and worse every time with each successive injection. This is the point. And this is just argued from first principles. It is not specific for COVID. It is not even specific for the spike protein. Any antigen that you would introduce into the body in this form, this technology is fundamentally flawed. This technology is fundamentally flawed. Even before we look at the first fatality, we know it's flawed.
And now we're seeing more and more and more fatalities, and that's only in the reported. So we have a big problem. Catherine Austin Fitz has been waiting on the sidelines here. So as you hear this information and you team that up and put the puzzle pieces together with the global agenda that you're talking about, Catherine, what do you see here?
So the existing leadership, particularly the financial system, doesn't see a way of maintaining democracy in the West after that. They don't see a way of getting elected after they inform everybody they've stolen their retirement savings. So they're moving forward with a global coup d'etat. What you're watching in country after country is the central bankers taking over the treasury function, because once they have vaccine passports and CBDC, they can, in effect, tax without representation. There's an old principle in the Western democracies, no taxation without representation, and that's what this is going to come down to. So what Dr. Palmer has so brilliantly explained is that there's somebody who's trying to kill us. And, it's a slow kill, but it's still. And that means we have to take action. The first thing we have to do is protect ourselves and our families from these injections. But then the second thing we have to do is stop the vaccine passports, because otherwise we'll find ourselves in literally every community will become a digital concentration camp. And then we're going to have to take back our governments, including our treasury.
That is very sobering. I was reading an article this morning from Dr. Mercola, and I appreciate his truth telling. He's often as well not allowed to speak these days, but his article very shockingly says the unvaxxed may soon be shipped to quarantine camps, and that's a terrible statement. But according to President Biden, a winter of death awaits anyone who rejects the experimental COVID jab. And this is what they're predicting, is a winter of death. They seem to be able to tell you what's happening, but it's not in the right context.
I would be very careful with that, because it's not, I mean, yes, in selected places we've seen the creation of camps for various purposes, including quarantine, but I assure you, they don't have the financial resources to put a third to a quarter of the population in camps. But more importantly, what you have to understand is the vaccine passports combined with an all-digital transaction system like CBDC means we're going to have digital concentration camps. In other words, our communities are going to be converted into concentration camps implemented with digital means. It's far more horrible than, a few camps here and there.
Right, so you're saying basically they can shut down your life. They don't need to put you in a camp, because you'll just be imprisoned in your own home. Basically, if they can tell if you're going 5 miles away and your credit card won't work, like you were saying, what are you to do?
Right. In other words, you won't be able to transact with their permission. If they decide they want to raise your children and they want to come and take your children, they can. So you know, this is, I think it's very hard for people in the Western world to contemplate the kind of control they feel they can implement with this technology. But we have, in 2022, the possibility of stopping it. This can be stopped, but it's going to take a significant number of people to act in accordance with their own best interests and the best interests of their family, their neighbors, and the loved ones.
So what would it be to both of you? What would it be? What would it take? And what would it look like to stand against it? We've decided we're not taking the vaccine. We're going to speak about the harms that we're seeing. But many of our friends and our loved ones, they are busy in their lives. They have not paid attention. They've gotten their two shots. And maybe they'll take a booster. Maybe that's it for them. Maybe they'll take two. What is the time period? It looks like we're not there because we're not actually seeing people really put up the resistance, especially in Canada, that we hope they would.
So I can't speak to Canada, but I've seen significant resistance all over the world. And a great deal of that resistance is quiet. You know, people taking their money out of the big banks and putting it in a more trustworthy local community bank or credit union. You know, turning off all the big tech companies and stopping giving them access. You know, we have a campaign called Cash Friday, where we ask everybody to use cash, and now a lot of people are using cash every day, because the more we can walk away from the digital concentration camp, the better. But we're going to have to start fighting with our state and local representatives, and we're going to have to march into court. You know, this has to be very broad-based, and we have to say no. We will not do this. We will not comply. If we don't comply, they can't implement the vaccine passport.
Okay.
Like, they want to get us into the trap before we see that it's a trap. And what Dr. Palmer and the Doctors for COVID Ethics and people with radio shows like yours are trying to do is tell people there's a trap. Don't get in it.
Right. So will something like a credit union still be a danger, though, if you put your money over into a credit union? Aren't there still governmental ways that they would control them? I mean, do you recommend gold and silver and anything like that?
So what we're talking about doing is decentralizing. We've seen the central bankers over the last 10 years try and implement very bad policies and been stopped in the United States because there were still 5,000 community bankers. We started screaming, what can you do? Every penny that you can decentralize, the better. Make no mistake about it, the last 18 months has been phenomenally profitable for the billionaire class. We have 500 new billionaires. The profit taking by big corporations on consolidating market share from small businesses has been enormous. You know, what we're talking about here, the pandemic has been phenomenally successful for the people who run the financial system. And we have to see that and play likewise. So anytime we can move our money out of their companies and into companies owned by us and our neighbors and family and friends and start to circulate, whether it's bank deposits, purchases, equity, the most important, food, energy, you know, how are we going to provide food for ourselves, how are we going to provide energy for us? Remember, in the digital concentration camp, they're saying, you know, if you don't do exactly what we tell you, we're going to cut off your food, we're going to cut off your energy. That's a business opportunity to start providing food and all these other things for ourselves.
Well, and that is exactly what we're reading more and more. As you prepare this, all of this information, Dr. Palmer, you're in Canada. I did an incredible interview with Dr. It was Earl, the fellow who was on the warp speed.
Dr. Charles Hoff?
Yeah, well, Paul Alexander is who I mean. Yes, Dr. Hoff is amazing, and he's just spearheaded D-dimer tests and all of that. Dr. Paul Alexander, being on the Warp Speed team with the Trump organization, and but just talking about the alarming thing now is like this has failed. Like this has failed. But the powers that be, like for instance, it's New Year's in just one day, in 24 hours, people will be celebrating. They're not supposed to be, because the powers that be are, they don't care that this is a failed experiment. And if they do or don't know, which I'm assuming they have to know, they bought out to their agenda. And so they hold all the strings. And now the people who say, well, I'm not going to do it or this and that, they start implementing these certain things, people losing their jobs and whatnot. Is there a certain period of time where we can get this back?
But I, you know, I just have to tell you one thing. There are, in a centralized system, there's very few people in control. If you look at everyone who's implementing this system, it's us. We're financing and building our own trap, and we have the power to stop.
Well, and I guess that's what we hope for. Is that what you believe, Dr. Palmer? I mean, we pray that more people show up with information and they make a stand.
Well, I think, yes, I'm actually optimistic.
I'm not feeling as optimistic these days, but I'm so glad to hear that you are, and I join my faith with yours.
I was delighted to find out just a while ago here in Waterloo there is a fairly large local group of everyday people, not on campus. Here on campus we have about 120 signatories to an open letter that we sent to the authorities on campus. But there is a group of citizens of Waterloo. They have a Facebook group with 4,000 or 5,000 people. So at least, right? I wasn't expecting that. So there are quite a few people from all walks of life who are aware of what's going on. They understand not only that the vaccines are bad and so on, they understand what Kerstin is saying. They understand the political agenda behind it. I think it is really, it's catching on. Whether it's the majority, probably it's not the majority of the population, but it's a sizable minority. And I don't even think we need the majority necessarily. We need just a determined minority to get this to a stop. I mean, you have already said yourself, right? We have reached a stage at which people get to know or learn of vaccine adverse effects among the family. This will not help to persuade them to get another booster and get another booster. I think each time another booster is mandated, more people will actually jump off and will say, okay, that's enough, I've had it.
And then we hope that we see success. And, you know, I truly want that. I think that the alarming concern is that maybe we have a bit of time in between that point and the initialization of the boosters, and all the while we're seeing the implementation of more and more lockdowns and strategies that are harmful to us physically and financially. And there are things that they could do, Catherine, I guess in the next little bit, that we'll have to stand up against.
So, you know, at one point when I spent 11 years litigating with this, you know, up against what I'll call the pro-centralization scene. And one of the things I did during that period is I went back and looked at the history of all my ancestors. And if you look back at the history of our ancestors, whether you're in Canada or you're in the United States or anywhere in the world, if you look at what we've overcome for the last 2,000+ years, you know, I dare say we can do this.
Right, right. So when I'm so sorry about that. There's a war going on outside. When you're advising people, then Catherine, in the financial field and all of that, you're giving this advice that you've already given to us, basically, and are people willing to make these big sweeping changes? I'm willing to. Honestly, I mean, I don't have,
What I see are more and more people doing it, as Dr. Palmer described, it's kind of it's developing momentum. You know, one of the things that's important to understand is that financial assets cannot solve a political problem. There's no place you can put your money if the world's going to be run by organized crime that's safe. In other words, if there's no rule of law, then your financial assets have no value except what you can protect with a gun, maybe. Okay? So at some point, most people, particularly people with family wealth, realize, you know, if organized crime is free to come take my assets, I've either got to stop that or I'm not going to have any. In other words, there's no workaround here. And so what I see are more and more people, including people of real means, you know, starting to take action and realizing if they let the vaccine task force go into effect, you know, then somebody can mandate putting poisons in their body and stripping out and emptying their bank account and brokerage account.
Well, when we see that some places in the world have actually already begun, we've got video of people being vaccinated even against their will. I mean, there's a danger of just complete civil unrest and an uprising, which might be very necessary. But we do hope that the powers that be, with all of this information, if they're busted, I mean, if people like Dr. Palmer keep speaking, if people like yourself, Catherine, keep speaking, you have to believe that sooner or later it gets a bit embarrassing to actually be on the wrong side of this.
I think it's very important to frame this correctly. We are the bringers of the law. Our objection is that the global governments, many of them are operating outside the law. They're violating their own laws. And our tax money and different resources are being used in ways that are criminal. Our objection is to failure to follow the law. And we are the bringers of the law. We're not bringers of the revolution. They're the bringers of the revolution. You know, this is a global coup d'etat. We're trying to stop a global coup and return the rule of law. So we are the bringers of the law.
That's so good. And in your understanding of being a Christian as well, I guess this is very much a spiritual battle, not just a physical and medical battle. This is really of epic proportions, good against evil. It's the ultimate, it's the biggest fight of good against evil I think that we've ever seen, and it's just beginning, and we intend to win.
I agree with that.
Right, and because the big issues here are not financial. Sorry, Michael. The decisions here are not financial. They're about protecting our children and the next generations and preserving the human culture and civilization for everyone and the next generation. So this is, you're right, this is much bigger than just a medical or a legal or a financial fight. This is, you know, this is about the future of our civilization and whether we're going to have a civilization.
Yeah, I agree with that, but there's also, I mean, obviously there's danger, we don't have to belabor that point, but there's also really a chance. I mean, we see much more clearly than we ever thought we might be able to, who is who in this fight. I mean, everybody, I mean, there are a lot of people on the wrong side, but they have all revealed themselves. Every judge that defends nonsensical legislation or rejects well-founded lawsuits that are brought before him has revealed himself. All the media that keep repeating the same tired old lies that have already been 100,000 times refuted, they have revealed themselves. Every prime minister, every provincial premier who just keeps pushing vaccine mandates, they reveal themselves. Right? So I think we could, without this, we would never have seen as clearly as we do now where we stand, where who stands, who is on which side of this fight. So I think there is a huge opportunity for a real clean out and for a real new beginning. that we didn't, that we would not otherwise have gotten.
I like that. You give me great hope, Dr. Palmer, because, you know, dealing with this every single day, I appreciate, you know, you both said, well, obviously we see that people are trying to kill us, and it's a, you know, it's the worst evil, you know, of all time, but you're seeing that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and I think about how truth always shatters deception. It always does. It shines a light. There is, it's a really mystical, it's a powerful spiritual perspective and principle that light shines into a dark place and the darkness simply vanishes. And as you are both literally doing this, you're shining, you know, the light into this dark place and it is vanishing. So it's a bit of a fight, but I think that's an encouragement to all the people that are watching and the thousands and thousands that will see this in the next couple of days. Catherine, I understand that you like this book. I'm holding up The Real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the Global War on Democracy and Public Health. And very fascinating book telling the truth about this Anthony Fauci, who is, even as we speak, probably planning an Omicron vaccine.
So I wrote a review of the book. It's by Robert Kennedy Jr. And it's excellent, and it helps people understand the extent of the regulatory capture and corruption. You know, the government is now really a subsidiary of the big pharma company, and it's pretty frightening, but it does a very good job. Kennedy does an excellent job. He's a seasoned litigator of documenting how bad it is. And I think, you know, for many people, it's hard to believe it got this bad without them noticing. But, you know, Kennedy does a great job of helping you understand and helping you understand why you've got to act now, because this thing has reached a point of no return, and so it's going to require radical action. I just want to add one thing to the many reasons for optimism, and that is if you look at the economy, when you centralize control, both secrecy and central control is phenomenally expensive. If we can decentralize a great deal of the economy in ways that dramatically improve productivity, you know, tyranny is very, very bad for productivity, particularly a small business, which we've seen a lot. You know, we've seen a lot of small businesses unnecessarily destroyed over the last 2 years. So decentralization can produce phenomenal amounts of wealth if done properly. And so there is no reason for poverty and suffering economically as far as I know or can see. So, you know, we just can't afford this kind of billionaire class.
Well, that is all very good news. And the both of you are fighting as hard as you can. And I just want to extend a very grateful thank you. As all of the viewers that are commenting in the feeds are just like phenomenal. Dr. Palmer, your explanation and showing us those pictures and those graphs were absolutely eye-opening, riveting, and, you know, it helps us to comprehend and understand what's happening. And information like this gives us hope. I'm so grateful to the both of you. I hope that we can have you on again, because it seems to me that although we can hope for a very good ending to this, the battle is still raging, and we're going to have to fight hard together in the future.
Lauren, it was a pleasure.
Remember,
to be here.
We're stronger. You're stronger than you think you are.
Yes, ma'am. My dad always told me that. He said those exact words, Laura Lynn, you're stronger than you think you are. And we're finding that out. Dr. Palmer, thank you so much. If there's anything more that you want to close on, please give a final word. But thank you so much for your fight, your stand, your sacrifice. Thank you for your sacrifice at this epic time to speak the truth when that has become an act of courage.
Well, I mean, who wants to work at the place in which the truth no longer matters? What's the point? I mean, I'm not really sacrificing anything. Somebody else is sacrificing for me, but I have no, there's no reasonable choice anyway. So I'm at peace with anything that happens in this regard. And
you're an honorable man. And that you're so right. Being able to sleep at night is a gift because some people can't. Some people live in such a way that they have to look over their back all the time to see who's coming after them because they're living such a deplorable life. So I thank you for that, sir.
So thank you, and thanks to Catherine. I've been working with Catherine for a while now. She's really a wonderful lady, and I hope you will bring her on the show again. I think she deserves the show all by herself.
Oh, we absolutely will do that. We'd love to have her on. Yes, you both have kind of tied in the medical and the economic side, and working together is very good because it's all of it that's affecting us, all of it. The thousands of people losing their jobs right now because of the science is just, quite the price to pay. So I appreciate that.
Okay, well.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, God bless you in the future, and we look forward to having you on again because there's a lot more to tell. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Catherine, and we appreciate.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
Yes, we hope to talk to you again very soon, both of you. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Thanks.
Oh, man.
Something gigantic has happened this week. There is a world-renowned vaccine creator that went on his LinkedIn and put out a letter to every single professional in the world, essentially telling them we must stop the vaccination program immediately. This man could not be more pro-vaccine. In fact, he may be one of the most highly ranked and talented vaccine creators in the world. Let's take a look at the resume of the man that is screaming at the top of the mountain right now. This is Geert van den Bosch, PhD. He was at GSK Biologicals, at Novartis Vaccines and Diagnostics. He was the director, research program leader, and head of adjuvants. Solvay Biologicals, global project director of the influenza vaccines. For the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, he was the senior program officer, global health vaccine discovery. For Global Alliance for Vaccine Immunization, Gavi, he was the program manager. And at UNIVAC, he was the chief innovation and scientific officer. He's also at the German Center for Infectious Research, head of the Vaccine Development Office, and at Verico, he was the managing director. This guy is anything but an anti-vaxxer. He is as pro-vaccine as you can get, yet there is something that has got him terrified. He did an interview. I think this interview is so perfect that I'm going to do something we rarely do here on the High Wire. We're going to go through the interview as it appeared. But let us walk through what I believe may prove to be the most important interview in the history of mankind. Let's get started.
Fact is that these long-lived antibodies, which have high specificity, of course, for the virus, they outcompete our natural antibodies. Because their natural antibodies, they have a very broad spectrum, but they have low affinity. Right? The specific antibodies will still continue to outcompete your natural antibodies. And that is a huge problem because I was saying just a few minutes ago, these natural antibodies, they provide you with broad protection. This protection is, yes, it is variant non-specific. It doesn't matter what variant you get. It doesn't even matter what type of coronavirus is coming in. They will protect you. Unless, of course, you suppress this level of innate immunity, or it is, for example, outcompeted by long-lived specific antibodies. And so it's not like, okay, you missed it. Okay, let's try again. No, you did some harm. I mean, this is different from drugs. Immunizing somebody is installing a new software on your computer. Don't forget, I mean, these antibodies, they will be recalled every single time you're encountering a coronavirus. You cannot just erase this. So this is very serious.
This is not like a drug. This is very serious. This is, he uses the term long-lived antibodies. I'm going to use sort of a football way to describe. Now, I think this video is pretty clear, but I really want to make sure that we all get this because I actually learned something this week that I wasn't fully aware of, and now it is crystal clear. But let me see if I can help make it crystal clear for anybody that's sort of thinking about what he said. Now, here's what he is describing. And if you ever, played any sport, soccer, football, hopefully this makes some sense to you. But on our team, in our immune system, we have what are called non-specific antibodies. They have, he called it, broad spectrum, low affinity. They don't care who is coming across. In this case, let's look at the other team. Let's say these are all variants of coronavirus. We got the A variant, F, T, R, L, Y, X, okay? Now, it doesn't matter who gets the ball in this case. When we have nonspecific, anyone that comes across. So let's say X gets the ball, running back gets the ball, comes running over here, boom, right here, nonspecific antibodies, boom, tackled, dead, not going anywhere. But let's say it's a different play. Let's say they decide they, you know, we're going to run Y. So they run Y with a roundabout coming through here. Boom, it doesn't matter. Nonspecific, we see the Y too. It doesn't matter. We're going to go after anything because it's nonspecific. It's brilliant. These are brilliant antibodies you have as your natural immune system. What if it's a trick play? What if they toss it to A and over here it tries to get through? Doesn't matter. Bam, nonspecific is going to go after the A variant too. This is how your immune system works, and it's fantastic. Now let's talk about what happens when we're given a vaccine. Let's go to the next one. In this case, we're now going to move into vaccine-induced antibodies. As he said, they're long-lived. They don't go away. This isn't a drug that's going to wear off 2 days from now. We say, you know what? You had an allergic reaction. We're not going to do that drug anymore. It is in you forever. There's no getting this thing out. And what did it just do? It created what he called specific antibodies. Specific antibodies is now what we're going to discuss. So now in this area, playing football, essentially everyone on the team has been told, you're looking for X. The antibody created, in this case, for the spike protein of SARS-CoV-2 that we first saw at the very beginning before there's any variants, our vaccine is going to make you fight that really well. So how does that work? Well, it's great. The coach basically said, I know for a fact that X, the running back there, is going to get the ball. So everyone on the team, tee on X. Great. So X gets the ball. Boom, comes through. It doesn't matter, man. They're all going to jump in there. Yeah! Yay, the vaccine's awesome. It totally stopped the virus. Okay? But now here is the problem he's talking about. This entire team can only respond to X. It only understands that it's a specific, it's an antibody specific to the virus it's looking for. So what happens if Y gets the ball? What if the team, they know, it doesn't matter, the coach said it was going to be X, it doesn't matter. Y gets the ball, Y comes around, boom, goes through here, can go anywhere they want. X does nothing. Boom, win, we're in the end zone, we just won, virus wins the whole game. Because no one on the team was waiting for X, was planned for X. In fact, they were told, don't go near Y. Okay? But here's something that I didn't understand. I understood that, and we've talked about that basically on the show, not in this way. But it goes one step further. Here's what I did not understand about the immune system last week that I do now. When he says that the vaccine-induced antibodies are long-lived, it means they're going to be there forever. He also basically explains that they are more robust. The virus-specific antibodies, the specific ones, they're more robust, and they outcompete your non-specific natural immune antibodies. So in this case, you do have some natural non-specific antibodies in there that could handle any one of the variants, but the problem is these guys are bullies. They're bigger. They're stronger. They're more specific and they're ready to do their job. So if Y gets the ball and starts coming around, our non-specific antibody is going to want to jump in there. Unfortunately, our vaccine-induced is going to push this out of the way and become a blocker to make sure or that virus gets all the way in and wins and gets the touchdown and could possibly leave you dead. This vaccine is bullying away your remaining natural immune system. You do have these, but they're never going to work again. Do you realize how horrifying this is? Now think about the hundreds of millions of people that are lining up around the world, that are lined up outside of stadiums right now because CNN and Tony Fauci just said, I love this vaccine. Well, Geert here, one of the leading scientists in vaccine and immunology in the world, is telling you everybody getting the vaccine is destroying their innate immune system. Those immune antibodies that were nonspecific, that could have handled any of those thousands of variants we just saw you. They're designed for it. By being vaccinated, you just assured yourself that there are no antibodies inside of you to fight the variants. So if we have strayed far enough away from the vaccine-induced variant that we were looking at, the original spike protein, everyone that is vaccinated is now in horrible, horrible trouble. They're going to be attacked by variants, and their bodies will not mount a defense. We are talking about carnage like we've never seen.
But the problem I'm talking about is a global problem. It's not an individual getting an adverse event. It's a global problem of making this virus increasingly infectious because we leave it all the time a chance, an opportunity to escape the immune system, and to drive this, to whip this up, you know, up to a level where the virus is so infectious that we can even no longer control it.
And he says, I am worried about a global event. What I'm talking about is a global issue. And the global issue is the fact that we are helping this virus gain function. We are turning it into a killer in every single body that is getting it. Well, now what this vaccine is doing is it's turning hundreds of millions of people around the world into a gigantic gain of function laboratory. And where I have told you before that in nature, viruses tend to mutate to become less deadly because if they kill their host, they don't move on. In the evolution, they want to move on, so they stop killing their host. What he's saying is this isn't a natural pandemic. We have inserted ourselves here. We are now inserting a mechanism that we're teaching it to actually go the opposite direction. It's getting more deadly, and the way we're doing it, the other one will not compete. It's not going to move in the direction that a natural virus does because we're not acting naturally. We are putting immense pressure on it with an underperforming vaccine that is going to turn it into a Hulk. And his concern is that it will become so virulent and so deadly, there is nothing we can do to stop it. Now, listen to this.
I've seen the question many times, and quite frankly, I get asked the questions. We're coming to a point where people are going to have to take these vaccines. Well, that looks as though it's the reality, either in the context of work or in the context of travel. Based on what you're saying, they're in a lose-lose situation. What does this mean?
Well, what does this mean is very clear. Let's consider the consequences of this, both at a population level and at an individual level. As a matter of fact, it is detrimental, both on a population level as on an individual level. And I'm telling you why. I think the population level, I explained to you, we are increasingly facing highly infectious strains that already right now, we cannot control, because basically what we are doing is when we vaccinate somebody, you're turning this person in a potential asymptomatic carrier that is shedding the virus. But at an individual level, you are at the same time losing the most precious part of your immune system that you could ever imagine of. And that is your innate immune system, because innate antibodies, the natural antibodies, the secretory IgMs, will be outcompeted by these antigen-specific antibodies for binding to the virus. And that is a long-lived suppression, and you lose every protection against any viral variant or coronavirus variant, etc. So this means that you are left just with no single immune response. It's none. Your immunity has become nil. It's all gone. The antibodies don't work anymore, and your innate immunity has been completely bypassed. And this while highly infectious strains are circulating. So, I mean, if that isn't clear enough, I really don't get it. And people, please do read, you know, what I posted, because it's pure science. And as everybody knows, I'm a highly passionate vaccine guy, right? And I have no criticism on the vaccines. But please use the right vaccine at the right place and don't use it in the heat of a pandemic on millions of people. You're going to pay a huge price for this. And I'm becoming emotional because I'm thinking of my children, of the younger generation. I mean, it's just impossible what we are doing. We don't understand the pandemic. We have been turning it in an artificial pandemic. Who can explain where all of a sudden all this highly infectious strain come from? Nobody can explain this. I can explain it, but we have not been seeing this during previous pandemics. During natural pandemics, we have not been seeing it because at every single time there was the immunity was low enough so that the virus didn't need to escape. So at the end of the pandemic, when things calmed down and it was herd immunity, it was still the same virus circulating. What we are now doing is that we are really chasing this virus, and it becomes increasingly infectious. And I mean, this is just a situation that is completely out of control.
And when a man who has made vaccines his whole life, that has run most of our vaccine programs around the world, or many of them, when he tells you this vaccine is doing the worst thing of all, it is destroying your innate immune system. It's destroying your natural immune system that would not have any problem fighting variants, would be very good at it, but in this case, it has turned it, he says, nil. It doesn't exist anymore. Your immune system is all gone. It's all gone. Meanwhile, it is fighting a war with a now deadly pathogen that the vaccine forced to be deadly. He doesn't tell you if the vaccine ends up stopping the infection and transmission, then some of the things that I'm worried about won't happen. He is telling you it has already happened. I am not hypothesizing in the future. I am telling you all of these variants that they are reporting on coming out of South Africa, coming out of Brazil, coming out of the UK. Guess why they're coming from there? Guess where our vaccine trials were from day one? We have been mutating this virus with this product. We have made a grave and dangerous error. And the question we've got to ask ourselves is, what are we going to do about it? Please share this video everywhere you can with every human you know. Think about it. You know, your pro-vaccine friends cannot argue with this video. They cannot say, oh, this is Bobby Kennedy or this is Sherry Tenpenny. This is one of their best and brightest that is warning the world. If we do not share this video, then we are complicit. Then we will be complicit in what could lead to one of the most catastrophic mistakes ever made with this planet and with our species. Do you realize how horrifying this is? Now think about the hundreds of millions of people that are lining up around the world, that are lined up outside of stadiums right now because CNN and Tony Fauci just said, I love this vaccine. Well, Geert here, one of the leading scientists in vaccine and immunology in the world, is telling you everybody getting the vaccine is destroying their innate immune system. Those immune antibodies that were non-specific, that could have handled any of those thousands of variants we just saw you. They're designed for it. By being vaccinated, you just assured yourself that there are no antibodies inside of you to fight the variants. So if we have strayed far enough away from the vaccine-induced variant that we were looking at, the original spike protein, everyone that is vaccinated is now in horrible, horrible trouble. They're going to be attacked by variants, and their bodies will not mount a defense. We are talking about carnage like we've never seen.
Power coin.